British Spy Stories. Season 3. Official Denial. Episode 5. The main doors of the hotel slide open, letting in a rush of cold air. Gabby and Laravel walk out and across the square, before disappearing into the city's side streets. The first bar they find is almost empty, hidden in a narrow alleyway near to the main shopping area. They order drinks and sit at a table in one corner. Gavi produces several photos of Overbeck, and they lay them out on the table to get his features into their brains. But he's not in the place, and they drink up and move on. They try two more bars near to the first. One is very busy and full of 20-somethings, gaggling three deep to get their drinks. The boys in expensive shirts and the girls in tiny skirts. Laravel and Gabby decide not to buy anything, but just push around the crowd to see if anyone looking like Overbeck is hidden away in a corner. But they see no one. The next bar is a quiet, mostly purple-lit space in a basement, with jazz playing softly. Here, people are coming in and out more often. Gabby and Laravel buy drinks and sit at the bar, as they've given up trying to be subtle about their search now. Laravel sees a man who looks a bit like Overbeck, and they spend 5 minutes trying to get a better look at him. Then his wife notices and convinces her husband that it's time for them both to go. As the man passes Gabby, she gets a good view of his face, and it's not the man they're looking for. The two spies are on the verge of giving up for the evening, when Laravel taps Gabby's arm and nods in the direction of a man sitting in one corner of this final bar this evening. Gabby looks across the space, then back to Laravel and nods almost imperceptibly and widens her eyes. The man is draining the last dregs of his beer 2 minutes later, and he pulls on his coat and makes for the exit. The women follow. Outside in the street, he walks across the busy main road and disappears into back streets beyond. They follow around one corner, then another. He is keeping up a fast pace, despite the numerous drinks he seems to have had this evening. He reaches another busy road and just makes it across before a rush of traffic arrives, and Laravel and Gabby are forced to wait. When the last vehicle rolls past, they run across to the other side, but he's gone. They walk on for a minute, trying each direction and up two side streets, but there's no sign of him.
"It was him, wasn't it?" says Laravel.
"It looked like him, yes."
"Damn it, we were so close."
"We'll get another chance," says Gabby.
"Let's go back to the hotel. I'll buy you a coffee. And we can see if Gordon's found anything from his research."
Taras is sleeping at last. Nadia isn't cut out to be a nurse. All this bloody fuss is getting to her. Taras is normally self-sufficient, like she is. They both let the other one get on with their life, then go out together in Budapest to be seen. Everyone knows them. People thank Taras for his work and his connections. She's always treated well in restaurants and shops, and they always ask after her husband. She likes that sort of respect. She makes coffee and walks back into the sitting room, where he is on the sofa in an awkward position, with his bandaged leg pushed out and his foot on the coffee table. He hasn't been comfortable all day. At least the doctor was understanding, but they were paying him to be that way. Taras had had to threaten the man when the doctor had said that Taras should go to the hospital to have the leg seen to. "He is quite comfortable at home," he had said to the guy. She sits in one of the armchairs, picks up a magazine and starts to flick through, looking at adverts for Armani, Prada and Hermes. After a few minutes, Nadia rests her head back on the chair, and before she realizes, she's waking up 2 hours later, and the flat is in darkness. She stands up and turns on the big standard lamp, then turns to Taras. She jumps out of her skin as he is awake and his eyes are staring at her.
"My God," she says. "You gave me a shock."
"Thought I was dead."
"No."
She makes a half laugh and sits down beside him on the sofa.
I just wasn't expecting it. How are you feeling?
I'll be all right as soon as I find out who was supposed to kill that security guard, but didn't do their job properly.
I don't want to know,
she says. A smile falls away from the muscles on her face. They sit in silence for a minute, in the half-darkness.
Can we take a holiday, Taris?
Why?
I need sun and sand.
Nadia's eyes explore his features.
My work's here, he says.
Just for a couple of weeks.
I can't, didn't you hear?
She isn't scared of him like she used to be. But she changes the subject anyway.
I invited my new girlfriend here on Saturday night,
she says.
He nods vaguely.
You'll like her. I haven't met her boyfriend, though. He needs a job. I thought you might have something.
I don't know him, Nad. I only give jobs to people I know.
Well, you'll meet him on Saturday. He's been through a hard time.
I'm not a fucking charity, says Taris, widening his eyes.
I know. See what you think, anyway,
she says.
You're hungry?
He grunts, which she takes as a yes, and she walks to the kitchen. The dark blue Jaguar Sentinel pulls up at the curb outside the Royal Academy. A ringing sound comes through the speakers of the car, and Sir Bernard's driver answers the call.
Sir?
Yes, Percy.
Agent Oxwood, for you, sir. Video call.
Sir Bernard considers for a moment.
Put him on, please.
A screen in front of Sir Bernard changes from the MI6 Royal Crest to black, then to an image of Nick Warren in an office.
Oxwood, what can I do for you?
I wanted to flag an operational risk here, sir.
Oh, yes.
Black Hawk.
Sir Bernard smiles as he wondered how long it would take before Oxwood raised this to him after sending Gabby to Hungary.
What about her?
She's refusing to take direction from the team here,
says Oxwood.
It's not going to work, I'm afraid. We need to control things centrally.
What did she say?
That she'll only give me 3 hours' notice of her ops.
And how long do you need?
Says Sir Bernard.
I need to agree what the ops are, sir.
Nick, do you know what Operation Millport is doing?
Not in detail, sir.
It will change the direction of the illegal arms trade across Europe.
What is it?
I can't tell you, Nick, sorry. Only 5 people know. But safe to say that Black Hawk is one of our best field operatives. She's not going to do anything that will screw up whatever you have going on.
But I'm working blind here, sir. She could do anything.
She won't, Nick. It'll help you, honestly. She and her team are only there for a week or two. They'll do their work and get out. Do you know Gabrielle, Nick?
Yes, sir.
So you know how she operates. Strikes hard, then leaves.
I'm aware, sir,
says Oxwood.
But can I at least have some sort of briefing, some idea of where she might strike?
Sorry, Nick. That's not possible, says Sir Bernard. But please do give her every support you can. If she asks for intel or resource.
There's a moment of silence while Sir Bernard waits before a sullen confirmation comes from Oxwood, and they end the call. The screen returns to black, then the MI6 crest slowly fades up on the display. The driver steps out and opens the rear door. Sir Bernard has a few brief words with him, then walks under the archway and across the square to a small set of double doors set to one side. He slides a card through the reader and waits for the light to turn from red to green before going inside. He climbs one set of stairs and goes to the end of the corridor, then drops down a second staircase to a network of low passages. Sir Bernard turns into a large room that is laid out as a restaurant, with stiff white linen cloths and shining glasses. Connie Barrett, MI5 Director of Operations, is sitting in the far corner of the otherwise empty room. She's wearing a grey skirt and jacket, and a white blouse, with a nuance of informality. Her grey hair is fashioned into a curly perm that frames pale blue eyes. Her oval face is prone to look both enthusiastic and serious simultaneously, when at rest.
Hello, Connie. She smiles.
Bernard, how lovely to see you.
He sits opposite her.
How's five?
He says. She takes a slow breath in through her nose.
Under pressure,
she says. New PM with big plans?
Quite. I imagine you're being kept busy too, Bernard.
I am.
A waiter appears from a white arch halfway down the room, and they order tea and crumpets for two.
I wanted to talk about Agent Exeter,
he begins.
Her dear mother called me to voice her concern.
Connie looks directly at him and raises one eyebrow.
Exeter may be becoming a risk.
Traitors only last so long in the intelligence service before time and events catch up with them. Didn't you think, Bernard?
I think we should do something.
Remove her,
says Connie, with no emotion.
Retire her, I was thinking.
Give her a narrative.
Cost reduction across the whole department. Time to modernize the service, cut overheads. You know the sort of thing.
My resources are tight. Can she be useful in anything one last time before we do that?
Sir Bernard nods.
Possibly. We know the Russians are desperate to get hold of many things. We could use her to feed some dum-dum one last time. They still trust her as a source.
Do they?
She says.
Are we sure?
We can test it,
says Sir Bernard.
Her handler is Maxim Kuznetsov, part of the diplomatic staff of the Russian embassy in London.
I've seen the file, he says. He's close to retirement. We could use that.
How?
They're close, I understand.
Sexually?
Says Connie.
No, but he has little to go back to in Moscow. I'm wondering if we can turn him and gain some insights into SVR operations using her.
What would we offer him? New identity or just protection?
We both know that protection doesn't work with ex-SVR agents.
No, you're right,
she says, and takes a gulp of tea.
I need to know what he can offer. He doesn't strike me as a key SVR resource. He only runs Exeter and two other spies, one in the Polish embassy and one in the French. He's not exactly central to their plans.
Let's see what happens then, he says. I meant to say about Exeter. I'm meeting her mother next week. I'm thinking Fiona can be part of our removal operation.
I knew Fiona 20 years ago,
says Connie.
Still formidable, he says.
What could she do?
Catch Exeter when she falls,
he says.
I want to keep her alive.
Fiona's husband's dead, isn't he?
Says Connie.
10 years ago now.
What happened? I seem to recall some MI5 involvement at the time.
I believe so, says Sir Bernard. I'm not across the detail. The operational files, though, were sealed by the two men who were doing our jobs at the time.
Sealed?
She says.
Why on earth was that?
I don't know.
I've never heard of records not being accessible at our level.
Nor me.
Aren't you curious, Bernard?
She says.
An intelligence operation that is so sensitive that even the people running the show can't see what happened. What if we approve an operation that does the same thing again? It could be very messy. This is a cover-up, Bernard.
Her passion rises.
I can't let this ride.
Be careful,
he says.
There'll be good reasons why it was covered up. Do you want to be the girl who kicked the hornet's nest?
We're in charge now, she says. We must do things the way we see fit. But I'll be subtle about it. I know the way the service works.
I know you'll tread lightly, Connie.
I will get to the bottom of this, Bernard. Something's gone on, something people want to forget. And I'm going to find out what.